This is Midday on WNYC. I am Arun Vanigopal. We've all seen footage of immigrant children being escorted to foster care facilities in New York and around the country, but relatively little is known about the organizations housing them. One organization that's come under scrutiny is Bethany Christian Services, which operates out of Michigan and receives significant funding from the family of Betsy DeVos, the education secretary. Amy Littlefield and Tina Vasquez have been reporting on Bethany for Rewire News. In the recent article titled, Bethany Christian Services is Fostering Migrant Kids, it also has a history of coercive adoptions. They detail the troubling history and practices of Bethany Christian Services and discuss the potential for even greater harm that is being overlooked. We're glad to have both Amy Littlefield and Tina Vasquez on the show. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having us.
So tell me, Amy, tell me a little about Bethany Christian Services. Who is this organization?
So Bethany Christian Services is a familiar name to those of us at Rewire.news who've been reporting on reproductive health care access for many years, because they are really a powerhouse on the Christian right. And in addition to being one of the nation's largest adoption agencies, they are an anti-choice religious organization that exists in large part to dissuade people from seeking abortions. And they also have a troubling record of coercing parents into putting their babies up for adoption through Bethany's network once they have, you know, convinced them to carry their pregnancies to term. And we noticed that the immediate news reports surrounding the separation of children from their families said very little about this record. So we wanted to set the record straight, to dig into our own archives and note that Bethany is an anti-LGBTQ, anti-choice organization with a clear religious and ideological agenda, which I think is something people should be aware of when they've been charged with caring for some of the most vulnerable people you can imagine, migrant and refugee children who have been separated from their parents. So Bethany, you know, just to give you a sense of their scope, you know, we know they have an annual revenue of more than $98 million. A lot of that comes from agreements with state and federal governments. They're an anti-choice organization. Many of your listeners might be familiar with crisis pregnancy centers. There's a recent Supreme Court decision, Nifo v. Becerra, that gave these anti-choice organizations even broader license to deceive patients. They often pose as abortion clinics, but their true purpose is to dissuade people from seeking abortion care. By telling them things like abortion causes breast cancer or causes emotional damage, none of which is actually supported by evidence. And all of this you'll see if you go to Bethany's website. They have language about unintended pregnancy that is targeting people who, in their words, are overwhelmed or scared or their mind is racing. And they try to target people who might be leaning towards abortion. And they purport to offer counseling services about all options, but in fact, they're steering people towards carrying their pregnancies to term. And they really do have a troubling record of pressuring these folks to give their babies up for adoption through Bethany's network.
And it sounds like, as you've touched upon, they have some powerful allies, including former governor and now Vice President Mike Pence. Is that right?
That's right. So when he was governor of Indiana, Mike Pence shifted millions of dollars in funding that was intended for low-income families in the state, temporary assistance to needy families money, which is intended to help low-income people survive. He diverted millions of dollars in that funding to anti-choice crisis pregnancy centers through a program called Real Alternatives, which subcontracted with Bethany Christian Services. So there's that tie. That's one figure in the current administration that they're tied to. And then, of course, as has been mentioned, they have ties to Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, whose cousin by marriage served as the senior vice president of Bethany, although Bethany told us he's no longer there, and whose family foundation has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Bethany.
So, Tina, can you tell us a little more about this organization in terms of how old they are and if they've always had this very clear sort of, approach to adoption as well as abortions?
Sure. So with Bethany Christian Services, the children in their care are between 7 and 9 years old. But this is just this particular organization. There are other organizations that are contracting with ORR that are troublesome for different reasons when it comes to reproductive rights.
And just to remind us of who ORR is and how their affiliation with this, or a connection rather, to Bethany.
So for children that are unaccompanied immigrant minors, children who migrate alone to the United States, or children that were forcibly taken from their parents at the border, they get funneled into Office of Refugee Resettlement Custody. So ORR is the federal agency that handles young immigrants who aren't funneled into the detention system. And so there have been issues prior to the Trump administration about how religiously affiliated shelters sort of impact young people in their custody. Under the Obama administration, there was a case with the ACLU that's ongoing. I believe oral arguments begin in August, in which young people who are in Office of Refugee Resettlement Custody were getting kicked out of religiously affiliated shelters just for accessing abortion or for asking questions about being able to access abortion. And so I think Scott Lloyd, the director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, has been in the headlines very recently, not tied to the children separated at the border, but because of the Jane Doe cases that emerged, in which Scott Lloyd implemented a policy that essentially blocked young people in ORR custody from accessing abortion care. So over the weekend, there was an article published by the New York Times that sort of very quickly referenced that some of the young people that were taken from their parents are teenagers, and some of them are pregnant. And there are larger concerns outside of Bethany, obviously, for religiously affiliated organizations that are essentially contracting with OR for the care of these young people because of the ways that they have oversight over their personal choices.
So tell me a little more about Bethany in terms of the scale of their operation. You mentioned this figure, Amy mentioned this figure earlier, $98 million in annual revenues. So are they spread out across the country or mostly focused on Michigan and Midwestern states?
They're really spread out across the country and around the world. And for those folks who want to learn more about the history of Bethany in the context of Christian adoption agencies operating not just domestically but internationally, some of the problems in their course of practices, Catherine Joyce's book, The Child Catchers, is a good place to get that deeper history. But so we know that Bethany has a record in various states, not just in Michigan, but of pressuring people to not just carry their pregnancies to term, but to put their babies up for adoption through Bethany's network. And I can give you one example. This one happens to be in Michigan. A 17-year-old girl named Alex Robinson gave birth in Muskegon, Michigan, last year. She told the local news outlet, Local 4 Defenders, she hadn't even realized she was pregnant. She'd been at the beach on vacation with friends. Her mother was back in Illinois. She was in shock. She'd just given birth and hadn't realized that she was pregnant. And within a few hours, she said, a Bethany Christian Services representative was at her bedside with paperwork for her to relinquish her baby. She ended up changing her mind, you know, when everything kind of sunk in, and when she got home and was able to talk to her mother, she decided she wanted to keep her child. And she ended up having to go to court to get her baby back because Bethany wanted to proceed with the adoption. Another example, and this is one that Catherine Joyce documented in her book, in 1999, a woman who she called Carol Jordan found an ad under crisis pregnancies in the Yellow Pages. This is, again, what we're talking about, targeting people who may be considering abortion or may, you know, be in a vulnerable position where they don't know where to turn and they're pregnant. They invited her to their office. A counselor started talking to her about poverty rates for single mothers and convinced her that adoption would really be the best option for the baby. They isolated her in a so-called shepherding family home without any outside contacts, made her feel, in her words, like a walking uterus for Bethany. And when she had second thoughts about giving her baby up after she delivered her child and wanted to take the baby home, a counselor brought the adoptive couple into her room at the hospital sobbing and warned this woman that she'd end up homeless if she didn't give up the baby. So she really ended up feeling like she had no meaningful choice but to surrender her child. So these are the types of practices that we're talking about in terms of Bethany's history of coercive practices around adoption. And I think it's something that's important for people to be aware of. Now, we do want to know, we don't have evidence that Bethany is putting these migrant kids who have been separated from their families up for adoption. They have said pretty strongly that they intend to reunite these children with their families.
To what extent, Amy, to what extent uh-huh. have these reunifications happened under Bethany, to your knowledge?
So Bethany, the latest numbers that we've seen from Bethany, they say that they've reunited about half of the children who are in their care, and that all of the children who are under five have either been reunited or had travel plans to do so. And this was because there was a deadline by, you know, a federal court to you know, reunite those children with family members or sponsors.
Do you have a sense of how many kids we're talking about in the first place?
Well, it's an interesting question. We interviewed Donna Abbott, who was the branch director of Refugee Services for Bethany, and she refused to give us a number. This was on July 5th when we spoke to her. She wouldn't give us a number because she said it was such a moving target and the number was changing so quickly. But we do know from other reports that Bethany has about 100 foster beds in Michigan and Maryland. I'd seen the number 81 in terms of the number of separated children in their care.
Okay. So they're saying that about half of 81, around 40 or so kids, have been reunified, but there's no way to corroborate that. Am I right?
No, there isn't.
That's
and there's
right.
no way to corroborate the information.
I'm sorry,
from
Tina?
Federal agencies. There's no way to really corroborate the information from federal agencies either. I mean, the American Civil Liberties Union, which is largely trying to hold the administration accountable, that there's not a lot of proof being provided as to how these reunifications are taking place, when they're taking place, whether or not they will even meet the next deadline, which is July 26th, to reunite nearly 3,000 children that were taken from their parents at the border.
Now, here's a quote from Bethany's website. "The work we do equips families to be the answer for children in need, as Christ intended." Is that just sort of an innocuous phrase, or do you think it has a particular meaning in the context of what we're discussing?
No, I mean, I think that's very intentional and reflective of, as we said, the wider religious and ideological agenda that Bethany has. I think another place that we see that play out is when it comes to Bethany's rules around adoption and fostering by same-sex couples. And we're seeing nationwide right now, kind of at the same time that the fate of these children is in the hands of these ideologically motivated adoption agencies, Republican-led state governments and the federal government are moving to expand the ability of these Christian agencies to determine who gets to adopt or foster based on religious criteria, including whether they have a religious opposition to LGBT people. So this is sort of the latest front in the effort by Christian right groups to use religion as legal cover to discriminate. You know, now that same-sex marriage is legal, we're seeing this play out when it comes to same-sex adoption. And Bethany Christian Services is really one of the drivers of this agenda. They lobbied in favor of legislation that was passed in Michigan in 2015 to allow faith-based adoption agencies to make determinations about who gets to foster or adopt on religious grounds, which allows them to discriminate against same-sex couples. And in fact, there's a lawsuit in that state accusing Bethany of this kind of discrimination. And we've seen this kind of legislation proliferate. So I think we're really seeing kind of a wider agenda that is really about expanding a narrow view of Christian anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ, into all aspects of public life, whether it's adoption or healthcare. And, you know, they've really found strong allies in this administration, the Trump administration, as well as the state governments nationwide. I think Bethany's, you know, played an important role in that, and it's worth considering when we look at not just what they're doing with these children, but sort of their wider ideological agenda.
I'm Arun Vanigopal, and I'm speaking with reporters Amy Littlefield and Tina Vasquez about their recent investigation for Rewired.News titled "Bethany Christian Services is Fostering Migrant Kids. It also has a history of coercive adoptions." Later on in the show, Lindy Lou Eisenhood, a woman who served on a jury that handed down the death penalty to a Mississippi man, talks about the new documentary Lindy Lou, Juror Number 2. Then a look at how the Families Belong Together Coalition organized a massive protest against the Trump administration's family separation policy. You're listening to Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break. We'll be right back. midday on WNYC. I'm Arun Vanagopal, and I'm speaking with Amy Littlefield and Tina Vasquez about their investigation into Bethany Christian Services and their work fostering migrant children right now. Tina, can you tell me a little about the basics of how a shelter qualifies to receive federal funding? Do they have to offer certain services, or can anybody essentially apply for this work?
I mean, I think anyone can apply, honestly, and I think part of the reason why religiously affiliated shelters are so concerning are because of the policies that they're allowed to have in place regarding the young people and their care. When it comes to Bethany Christian Services, Amy and I, when speaking to Donna Abbott, specifically asked about how they would handle abortion and contraception access for girls, because that's the other thing important to note. While the children separated from their parents at the border recently as part of the zero tolerance policy in Bethany's care between the ages of 7 to 9, Bethany Christian Services has been contracting with the Office of Refugee Resettlement for years, and they have children as old as 12 years old that are in their care through these contracts. And so Bethany actually, well, Donna Abbott told us that she actually couldn't answer, really. She was kind of taken aback by the question that we asked her about what she would do should a 12-year-old in Bethany's care request access to abortion. She said that they would refer to Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement for sort of guidance on that. And that's where it comes back to Scott Lloyd and his policy of trying to ban young people from accessing abortion care.
And what other services do these children receive while they're in custody? Is all of this federally mandated in terms, is it very clearly spelled out what kind of services they need to receive while they're in custody?
Right. One of the things that we were really concerned about was the type of education that young people are receiving through Bethany Christian Services. The most that we learned was that they're going to special schools. It seems that children of different ages are placed in classrooms together Monday through Friday, and that teachers employed by Bethany Christian Services are providing them with education. And sort of what that looks like or what that entails, there isn't a lot known about that.
So there's no way to know whether they're providing an explicitly Christian religious education versus a more secular one.
We explicitly asked Aunt Donna Abbott that question, and she said that the education they were receiving was not religious in nature at all. But I cover detention very broadly, and I know that the education that immigrant children are provided by the Office of Refugee Resettlement is just troublesome. And this goes beyond Bethany Christian Services. But you have different children who speak different languages. Some of them don't speak Spanish or English, because increasingly it's indigenous people that are migrating from Central America. They're all kind of just put into a classroom with kids of different ages and different abilities and different educational needs. And that's what school looks like for the entirety of the time that they're detained, or in this case, separated from their families.
And how many facilities are we talking about where these kids are being held under Bethany?
I'm actually not sure of the number, but I know that through Office of Refugee Resettlement, there are it's a patchwork across the country. We're talking about hundreds of facilities that span wildly from, like, literally prison-like settings for young people in Office of Refugee Resettlement custody that have been accused of gang membership, for example. So they get placed in very high security settings that are like prison, and then it goes down from there. You have foster homes. You have what people are calling tent cities that are emerging under the Trump administration. You know, some kids are in an abandoned Walmart. Reveal recently reported, Auto Bogato reported that, you know, there are mobile home parks, office spaces, and it's all happenstance. There's no rhyme or reason as to why kids get sent where they do outside of the prison settings if they've been accused of something. But other than that, I mean, they could be sent anywhere in the country, and the setting could be wildly different.
Now, a federal judge has ordered that families be reunited within 30 days. How much progress has it made towards this goal?
It's not been a great deal of movement. I believe that children under the age of 5, there was a deadline in place Tuesday, and that was largely missed by the federal government. I think only 57 children were reunited with their parents. And I think the important context for that is that there are also reasons why parents, both parents and children, are being deemed ineligible for reunification. For parents, it could have to do with unrelated charges. It could be that they weren't the parent, but they were a family member. So there have been reports where a child could not be reunified with a relative that they migrated with because it was not their parent, but it was their grandmother. And then there are reasons why children are being deemed ineligible of reunification, and that is because their parent has already been deported or because their parent is currently in detention.
Now, Amy, the two of you write about the Michigan Department of Civil Rights discovering the, quote, chaotic situation in foster agencies. What exactly did they discover?
I mean, we actually obtained the handwritten notes from the department's director, Argus Nobulu, who was writing, recording the details of the chaos when he was on phone calls with Don Abbott, the branch director of Refugee Services for Bethany. He was writing things like, processing is disorganizing, disorganized. He was writing that it could take weeks, you know, to track down family members. The spokesperson at the Michigan Department of Civil Rights described a chaotic situation where Bethany would call around to detention center officials, who would then yell the names of children into rooms full of people to see if anyone there knew them. I mean, so this is the kind of chaotic picture that we're talking about when the Trump administration separated these children from their families with no real plan in place to reunite them.
Do we know what's going to happen to these kids who can't be reunited with their families?
In terms of kids whose parents have been deported already, the really troubling thing about that is that when we spoke to Donna Abbott, she explained to us that she was actually unsure of how those reunification would go because they'd not received any guidance from ORR about how to reunite a kid whose parent was in detention or a child whose parent was deported. She said that at her organization, Bethany Christian Services, they would ensure that the child was never left alone, meaning so if they contacted the parent in their country of origin and the parent expressed that rather than releasing the child to another relative in the United States, if they wanted to reunify in country, that Bethany would undergo that process with the parent and ensure that a representative or a person from Bethany Christian Services was on the plane with the child and flew to their country of origin to ensure that they were united with their parent. But that was kind of the general framework. But when it comes to having guidance in place from federal agencies like the Office of Refugee Resettlement, no such thing existed when we spoke to her.
Now, you describe a class action lawsuit against the ORR, again, the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Tell me what the goal of this class action lawsuit is.
I'm sorry, can you be more specific? Are you referring to the one related to the separated children? Or
this is the, it's called Azar versus Garza. It's a class action lawsuit against the ORR.
Sure. So in March 2017, Scott Lloyd, who's the director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement and a Trump appointee, implemented a policy that basically allowed shelters that contract with ORR to wield an unconstitutional veto power over unaccompanied immigrant minors' access to abortion. So the first Jane Doe to emerge, she was at a shelter in Texas and had undergone the judicial bypass process to be able to access abortion while still detained in OR custody. And even though she was lawfully able or should have been able to access abortion, Scott Lloyd decided, because of his religious beliefs, that she should not access abortion, so essentially blocked her for weeks and weeks from being able to access abortion care. And then in the weeks after that, more Jane Does emerged. There was an instance in which a young woman was raped and he blocked her from accessing care. That's important to note because it's estimated that 80% of girls and women from Central America that migrate to the United States are raped along the way. So if you are a young person who is raped and then you get funneled to OR custody before the federal injunction that is currently in place, Scott Lloyd can personally decide whether or not you get to access abortion care, even in instances of rape.
Do illegal immigrants have full protection under the Constitution?
Yes. And that is something that I've been asking a lot of people because during different hearings for the first Jane Doe, the government, the federal government, or attorneys for the federal government routinely sidestepped the question about whether or not they thought undocumented immigrants had the right to abortion. And they do, but how they are treated in federal custody because they are unauthorized to be in the United States is a very different story. I mean, you see a lot of reproductive rights abuses emerging under this administration in particular, like very clear attacks on immigrant women, whereas before, immigrant women who were in detention facilities, once it was discovered that they were pregnant, they were released. Under the Trump administration, they are now being detained. The cases that have emerged with the Office of Refugee Resettlement, it's important to note that they can now access abortion care because of this injunction. Oral arguments begin in September, but should the ACLU not win its case, that means that Scott Lloyd's policy is implemented again, and he gets to personally decide who in OR custody can access care.
Now, Amy, you quote Susan Hayes, the former legal director for Jane's Due Process, who said, "We have no idea if they are shuffling children around as quickly as possible so their parents can't find them. And I frankly don't believe Homeland Security's claim that 500 children have been reunited with their families. We have no way of knowing if they're actually making an effort to reunite families." How real is Susan Hayes' fear?
Well, I don't think the fear that these children could end up being adopted is totally baseless. I mean, it's worth noting that the threat of adoption is actually being used, reportedly used by government officials in order to deter people from filing asylum claims. The Daily Beast reported, for example, that a woman who had fled, I believe, from Guatemala was told by a Customs and Border Patrol official that if she followed through on filing for an asylum petition, that she could be jailed for a year and her child could be put up for adoption. So, you know, I think for the parents who are fleeing violence in their home countries and coming here, this prospect of adoption is could happen is not only a real fear, but it's being used, you know, by government officials as a form of deterrence, which is pretty chilling. And I think Tina can speak more to sort of what we know about the chaos within the system and sort of the perception by people, immigration attorneys who have been involved in the system for a long time, about how that chaos could sort of result in these prolonged separations.
Tina, do you want to address it?
Yeah, what's been expressed to me, and this is very strong language, but as really troubling policies from this administration sort of play out, I don't think it's unfounded either. An undocumented woman who was in family detention expressed to me that this is state-sanctioned human trafficking. These are children that are literally being disappeared into the system, especially in the initial days where parents were being given phone numbers to reach information, even just get information about their children, and the phone would ring and ring and ring. Mm-hmm. Or if you are in detention, you can't access a phone as easily as other people. Or if you'd already been deported, those numbers wouldn't work in your country of origin. So you have children that were taken from their parents with no framework in place whatsoever to reunify them. And if a parent has already been deported, and that means that a child will be in foster care indefinitely. If there's no framework in place, as Donna Abbott from Bethany Christian Services said, for reuniting children with their parents in their country of origin once they've been deported. If there's no guidance in place from the federal agencies responsible for this policy, what happens to children who are in foster care? Are they in foster care indefinitely? What if they don't have other family members in the United States? I mean, there are more questions than answers right now, and I feel like that is why so many people, especially when it comes to Bethany Christian Services, expressed fear and discomfort about an agency with a history of adoptive or coercive adoptive policies having custody of children that were taken from their parents. And in some cases, there appears to be no hope for reunification, at least in the near future.
And no oversight either to prevent this from happening?
Well, when we spoke to Donna Abbott, she said that in the year, so that's also important to note that Bethany Christian Services has been contracting with the Office of Refugee Resettlement before the Trump administration for many years. And according to Donna Abbott, they have never adopted a migrant child to an American family. That's the information that we were given.
Amy, tell me a little more about, I guess, the administration's, I guess, public stance towards this process. Is there, have they made it clear that they are worried, or they're simply just, I guess, deflecting the concerns of the public?
Well, I mean, I think there have been some comments from the administration that have really fueled the fears about what is going to happen to these children who have been separated from their families. I mean, for example, the New York Times reported that the Department of Homeland Security had said, you know, some children will remain separated from the adults they're traveling with if a family relationship cannot be established, or if there are concerns about the children's safety with those adults. So I think, you know, and then we have, on top of that, the fact that Bethany Christian Services has not exactly helped when it comes to those fears. You know, one of the earliest statements that Don Abbott of Bethany had made publicly was to say it's so early on to say whether these children will be available for adoption at all. And Bethany had also announced a waiver of its $550 international adoption application fee for the month of June, which I think Catherine Joyce points out many adoption reform advocates had criticized. We asked Donna Abbott to clarify those comments about it being too early on to say whether the children would be available for adoption. And as Tina pointed out, she said when she said it was too early, she meant that she just can't imagine that it would happen because they haven't seen it happen before, and they're not even sure how that process would come about.
Amy and Tina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I'm Arun Vanagopal, and I've been speaking with reporters Amy Littlefield and Tina Vasquez about their recent investigation for Rewire.News titled Bethany Christian Services is Fostering Migrant Kids. It also has a history of coercive adoptions. Up next, Lindy Lou Eisenhood, a woman who served on a jury that handed down the death penalty to a Mississippi man, talks about the new documentary, Lindy Lou, Juror Number 2. And later on in the show, a look at China's ambitious plans for railway expansion into Southeast Asia. You're listening to Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break.